more time. And I also want to welcome the officials from the Department of Science and Technology for being here to share with us that which they are doing in the Department of Science and Technology. I was just indicating to them that we don't really have much time to actually interact with them, precisely because science and technology is a national competency, and we are actually dealing more with concurrent issues like education, like health, and those things that are done in the provinces, because in the main, in the NCOP, we are representing provinces. That's why we are called the National Council of Provinces. So our interests mainly are the interests of provinces. We bring to the national, the constitution says that the NCOP is a national voice. I mean, it's a provincial voice at national level. And science and technology, while it actually affects the provinces, but it is a Section 75 matter in our constitution. That's why you'll see that we are not even going to debate science and technology this year in the NCOP, because we want to prioritize those issues that deal with provinces. But of course, we also are aware of the importance of science and technology in our country. That is, a country, we can't go anywhere if we don't develop scientific knowledge. If we are not innovative, we will not go anywhere. We depend for the rest of our lives on technologies of other countries, and therefore we'll remain a developing country forever. We want to move out of the situation where we are a developing country into a developed country. And in order to go there, we've got to see to it that we invest in science, we invest in technology, we invest in the gray matter enclosed in the skull of a child. And that's why we are saying, although it's a national competency, but we've got serious interest in it, we want to see it actually happening. It is for that reason that we actually called you here today to say, let us share experiences, let us hear what it is that you are doing with the money that we also participate in passing for the Department of Science and Technology. But I suspect we need to try to introduce each other, one another, before we start the meeting. I see there are some new faces. It looks like every time we interact with this department, there are new people. Ever since I came here, at least. Every time, it looks like there's a lot of, what do you call this thing? I forgot this English word, but there's a turnover, a very large turnover of people in the department. Be it as it may, it's okay as long as they'll be able to. There's some gender balance. Okay, good. I'm happy you have seen that. I was looking at that, but that's fine. If there's gender balance. Now, without much ado, I'm going to ask honorable members to introduce themselves. My name is C.A.C. Tolo. I am representing Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces. And I'll ask other members to introduce themselves.
I'm Natural Masilo, member of this committee from Northwest. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Maggie Matan from Gauteng. I'm Faith Masbo from Gauteng.
The department to introduce itself, or I don't know who's the head of the head of the delegation. Okay, good. Can you?
I'm Marjorie Pius. I'm one of the group executives at the Department of Science and Technology. And for my sins today and tomorrow, I'm the acting DG, because, and I must extend apologies from the Director General. He had to join a delegation out to Mozambique. So that is why he was not there to present this presentation to you.
Good afternoon. I'm Anisha Lusen. I'm also one of the group executives within the department. I look after the corporate services and governance portfolio. And no, I'm not new in the department. I've been around for as long as 5-6 years.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair. My name is Malukulan Malapani. I'm the CFO at DST.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Blessing Pashele from the Department of Science and Technology, and I'm heading the Science and Youth Unit.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Peggy Hadebe. I'm from the Human Capital Unit within the Department of Science and Technology.
Thank you, Chair. Uveli Igama Umvela Isibongo from the Department of Science and Technology.
I'm Paula Khao from PMT.
Thank you. Now that you know who is here, we can now. I see your titles are not like other departments as well. They are group executives. So it's okay. So it's fine. No problem. As long as the work is done. What is in the title, you know. We're going to ask the department to actually brief us on their strategic plan and their finances this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, Mr. Tola, honorable members, I'd like to say on behalf of the Director General, thank you very much for this opportunity, for seeing us so soon after education. And I have to respond to your comment around the gender. In the past, you know, the saying was, behind every man is a successful woman. But actually, with the criticisms that were leveled at us in the past, when we sent the DG to present to you, and that there were no women evident, we decided to show you who's not just in the throne, but the power behind the throne. Malekowani manages all our funds. She is our CFO. Right? And we've got Anusha who's on the corporate governance within the department and for the science councils as well. And then I work with most of the government departments. The program I head is called Social Economic Partnerships. So we strike memorandum of agreement with different departments to make sure that we're working jointly. Now, as for the title of group executive, it's because when we meet with industry, because science must play out somewhere in life, in some industry, and you say you're a DDG, they wonder if there's something to do with a gun or something. But if you say you're a group executive, then they know you're someone in government who's a force to be reckoned with. So this is why we change those titles. But now, to go then onto our presentation, I'm going to, and I'm using the DG's presentation, in fact, I'm going to speak specifically about the strategic framework, just reflect very briefly on what's the framework that actually guides us, and then to talk through some of the planning that we've engaged in to arrive at this business plan and budget that we have today. So there was a mapping exercise that actually informed that work within the department. And then touch on very briefly the new strategic initiatives that we are zooming in over this next 3-year period. And then just flag as highlights some strong achievements the department has made over these past few years. And then we'll get to the crunchy stuff, which is budget issues and policy options and so on. So then if I go very quickly to the strategic framework that guides us, many of you are familiar with them because we had to take to cabinet the National R&D Strategy in 2002. And we have not strayed from this course, where we're saying that there are the overriding twin goals of quality of life and wealth creation. So it must have social and it must have economic impact. And then when we map within this framework, so how do we see ourselves delivering on improvements to the quality of life and in wealth creation? With an indicators-based focus, we say there must be outcomes as far as science, engineering, and technology, human capital is concerned. If you generate scientists and engineers, you're going to impact on people's quality of life. You're also going to impact on wealth creation. Business performance on the extreme right-hand side. If businesses are innovating and they're using technology to innovate, there is going to be a strong impact on wealth creation, economy growth. You mentioned, Chair, the thing of imported know-how. We have to play on that base We have to decrease how much we are importing, both in technology products and even in terms of intelligence, in terms of knowledge. Otherwise, we're sitting with the situation right now where much of the climate change information is informed by scientists from abroad, the modeling systems they've got on the climate system. We need our own scientists to be sitting and modeling the climate and the impact it's going to have on South Africa and Africa. So we need to have less imported know-how and generate much more of our own. Current R&D capacity, this and future R&D capacity, we want to impact there. This is still part of our strategic framework. We firmly believe that we have to grow for the future. We've got to start getting youngsters in science and math. We've got to get more people undertaking studies, research studies at master's and doctoral level. And then we know that we're growing a strong workforce into the future. So keeping within the strategic framework, during the last two quarters of 2006, we then said, let us map for ourselves where we're supposed to be playing. Who are the stakeholders and role players within the science system? And what we recognize is that, you know, there's work happening in schools where we're supposed to be generating math and science matriculants. There's work happening in the further education and training institutions, in the universities of technology, in the universities at undergraduate level, at honors level, and then at research level. This is your master's and your doctoral. There's work happening in research councils. There's intermediaries, a whole range of government agencies. There's business who's involved. There's communities and the public benefit issues related to that. And then we're also supposed to be playing on the global stage. So we have to look at the international community. So we said in our mapping, in our planning, let's look at who's along this continuum of stakeholders and role players and try and find our space. In terms of looking at what all these groups are doing and what we're supposed to be doing, we said let's examine it in terms of the frontier stuff, the early stage, high-risk research, innovation now, applications that work and change people's lives now, basic fundamental research, human capital development and public infrastructure. Let's examine these groups in this context. Innovation, research work, human capital development and infrastructure. And going along with with that, we started our mapping exercise. This mapping exercise, we started looking at what is the kind of infrastructure we would like to see in schools. So, of course, we'd like to see in their resource centers, science labs, and so on. In the universities, we'd like, and the research community, we'd like to see high-performance computing capabilities. We'd like to see modern laboratories, the kind of research equipment in these universities that puts them on par with what we see in elsewhere in the world. We'd like to see fab labs available to business and available to communities. And I urge the members to actually make an effort to try and visit the fab lab in Soshanguve or the one at the Innovation Hub in Gauteng in Pretoria. The digital doorway, this is the kind of infrastructure that promotes access within communities and so on. Not to forget the one we've got in partnership with the foreign community, and that's SALT, the Southern African Large Telescope. So we mapped out where this infrastructure lies, how it relates to schools and so on. We looked at the human capital. What are we doing in schools? There's the Olympiad, the tracker program, in the universities of technology, there's NRF grants, bursaries, internships. The same happens in the universities at undergraduate level and at the research level with the new programs on fellowships and so on. We continue this mapping. In the research layer, we saw we're funding focused flagship research areas in biotechnology, advanced manufacturing, advanced metals that include titanium and so on. For business to promote research, we've recently introduced tax incentives. So we started mapping where are we supposed to be playing, what are we actually doing at the moment. Innovation for now. Many of these instruments that you see there, Sanerion Energy, the advanced manufacturing I mentioned, stronger support to the patent office.
Well, I just want to say, you know, there are all these applications if you could, you know, try to say them in full.
Yes, I'm trying to do that. So if the AMTS that you see there under intermediary agencies, or research council by the research layer. That's your advanced manufacturing. The AMI is Advanced Metals Initiative, where I mentioned we support titanium and so on. I think the objective here is to just show you that we engaged in a very deep analysis of what it is we are doing. And we try to map these initiatives in terms of, are they impacting in the school's environment? Are they impacting in the university research environment? It's like the tax incentives. That's impacting on business. So we tried to see, we were actually looking for gaps. It was a kind of gap analysis. At the innovative frontier level, looking at innovation later, we want to put stars in children's eyes, but we also want them to start thinking about how do they get to those stars? How do they get to the kind of brilliant scientific achievements that we see all around us? We conduct events like Science Week. We undertake in the universities initiatives like the Square Kilometer Array that we are bidding for, the Karoo Array Telescope, the CAT, the South African AIDS Vaccine Initiative, SAVI. These are things we are attempting to try and crack the issue of HIV/AIDS through discovering a vaccine. So this is the frontier stuff, the things which we are very hopeful about. Now, in doing this mapping exercise, we saw these gaps where we're doing nothing, a whole range of them. And we asked ourselves, honestly, should we be doing anything there? And we realized with the FECs, really we can play a supportive role for education, but we shouldn't be looking to start confusing everybody by looking for interventions in that space. So some of these gap areas we decided is where we play more of a supportive role than actually looking for things for DST to do. So, where do we see ourselves positioned? In that central block, which is around research councils, university research agencies, business and communities. We said that's where we should be doing the frontier stuff and the innovation program. We have a very strong responsibility on the human capital pipeline, so we consider that our business. And then we also have a responsibility to making sure we've got core science and technology infrastructure, basic science and technology infrastructure that makes this economy and the science community as modern as possible. So then from there, all these bubbles and squares and so on, we decided to map. We said, if the output, and I asked members to look at the bottom of the page, if you recognize quality output from the science and technology community in terms of strong scientists, strong engineers, then you should see them publishing articles in science journals, in engineering journals and so on. So we say on the one hand, we expect output in terms of new knowledge, and they must be publishing these articles. We, on the other hand, on the right-hand side, we say that if it's not about generating new knowledge for the sake of building scientists and engineers, then it must be impacting on the economy. They should be inventing, and therefore they should be patenting. They should be taking out patents on these inventions. We call them knowledge products. And so we should be tailor-making our interventions accordingly. So if it is publications and new knowledge, then we work very closely with the Department of Education. And I should mention that last week there was a ministerial bilateral where we've agreed to set in place at the DG level a task team to ensure there is stronger engagement between the two departments. At the high level, we will be working with Department of Education and NRF on the Research Chairs program. Right now, I can mention that we've already allocated 21 research chairs in universities, and we will still be allocating another 35 with this next call for proposals that has been issued. We have a commitment that by 2010, we will have 210 research chairs across all the universities in South Africa. At least 20% of those research chairs will be in the social sciences. On the PDPs, this is Professional Development Programs, and HCD Human Capital Development Instruments. We are working very strongly with the research institutions and the NRS to improve on the qualifications and on the research expertise of their own staff internally. And then, of course, RISA is your research and innovation support instrument within the NRS. This is where they give out research grants, they give out bursaries, and they recognize scientific excellence by according a status to certain researchers in terms of A-rated scientists and what is it, B and C-rated scientists and so on. It encourages the researchers to work harder to achieve that kind of status. A new instrument that we're introducing is these centers of excellence placed at universities. And there we give them a bigger grant to encourage them if they've achieved a certain level of excellence with their engagement and research on the international level. We want to encourage them further because then it serves as a magnet for new entrants, new youngsters to go into those fields. We recognize that as you move from knowledge generation, professors in universities doing research, you start moving to the applied side where the science is going to be used. And yes, mainly your science councils who get involved in doing applied research. But we recognize that actually we need beyond science councils some other instrument where the output is more, have they generated an invention that is useful in industry, that is actually going to generate wealth. And so we will be putting in place centers of competency centers of competence. That will be similar to the centers of excellence, but the outputs are going to be different. We will also, in this regard, establish what we call the Foundation for Technological Innovation. And members will note that the documentation around that was sent out to you in your information pack. I'm not delivering that presentation. It's something new that is being designed, and there will probably be a presentation on it later. There's also the FTI is the Foundation for Technological Innovation. What we are trying to address with this FTI is to support the commercialization of research from universities and research councils, or public funded research, to commercialize it so that we don't have the research results lying on the shelf somewhere. We don't have our scientists believing that they're getting funding for research, but there's no need for them to actually look at turning that into use for the benefit of society and the benefit of the economy. We are also setting up what we call the Public Benefit Foundation. And with the Public Benefit Foundation, this is where we're saying in applying the sciences, engineering, and technology, we must look at how does it benefit communities, how does it benefit the poor. So the FCI will focus on applying research results into commercial outputs in industry, and the Public Benefit Foundation will have a heavy bias to areas of poverty and underdevelopment. Those are the two new instruments, along with the centers of competence we will be introducing. You'll notice that we also recognize there's a need for work to be done, more work to be done on technology transfer and proliferation, encourage people to take up these research results. But that's at the extreme end where you're actually talking directly to businesses. And this is where we believe the Department of Trade and Industry, with CEDA, COOLA, and the IDC, have a stronger role to play. Of course, CEDA being your small enterprise development agency. So roughly, this is our thinking about where we should be playing, where the Department of Education should be working with us and we working with them, and where we should have relationships with DTI. So in terms of strategic initiatives, we recognize that we are planning and we're looking quite far ahead. And it actually lines up well in terms of the Treasury focus on 10-year time frames for planning around infrastructure for long-term activities like research. So we're putting in place a 10-year plan. This is also endorsed by a review that was undertaken on South Africa's science system, a review that was undertaken by the Organization for Economic Cooperative Development. They urged us to be much more structured and longer-term focused in our planning for the science system. And we believe we have time to work through this 10-year plan. But the understanding is now when we took through the OECD report to Cabinet last week, Cabinet has indicated that there is a need for this plan. And so we have been tasked to finalize it by the middle of July. I've indicated to the members that we have already started working on a foundation for technological innovation to address a weakness in our system about commercializing research results. The foundation for public benefits, another weakness in our system that we're not working strongly enough to make science and technology matter in poor people's lives. Competency centers is another one that gets us much more focused. And then there's another area of work that you find in your pack. A full overview is presented in a PowerPoint structure on the National Human Capital Strategy. I mentioned earlier on in the slide that we recognize we really have a strong responsibility to play here. I think there will be a presentation to the committee at a later stage in the year, because this is all these new initiatives are work in progress. So some achievements of what we've done so far. As the members are no doubt aware, we acquired a new DG from 1 April last year. He's now been in office a full year. And we even have a new building. I think some of the members have seen it. And internally, in line with the new mandate we received, we've had some restructuring. I can safely say that all of the top posts have actually been filled. There are a few vacancies at the deputy director level which are being filled as we speak. So staffing and vacancy rates is not a critical issue at this stage. We believe we're in line. Turnover, it's more or less consistent with most organizations. We did a benchmarking study around that. We've recently completed a system-wide review of South Africa's science and technology system, and we had an external one done, as I mentioned, by the Organization for Economic Cooperative Development. If you have questions on those, Anusha Lucen, Dr. Lucen next to me, will be able to take questions on that. The Innovation Fund, which has been running since about 1998, it's matured, and the number of successes has been increasing very steadily. So there we can actually see that some of government funding has been wisely applied. The Space Agency has recently gone to Cabinet, I think because there was legislation around it that came past the committee. That has now been approved, and we're in the process of actually setting it up. You'll see elsewhere, I'll talk about Tumbandila Sat, the satellite that we will be launching. Tax incentives, this has been a big break. What we've done is we've now actually lowered the cost of doing R&D for companies. So this should encourage them to do more research, employ more engineers and scientists in order to do that research, or create career spaces for our young. Intellectual property rights from public-funded research. This, I think, also came past the Select Committee, and it will be coming back again, because we will be taking it forward. We introduced the policy around it. We want to harvest the results from research that government's been paid for, and that is at the heart of that new legislation. We can honestly say that 10 million of our international resource funds has leveraged 80 million from foreign sources. So it actually pays. By us introducing projects and looking for a foreign partner, we actually get projects that are far more valuable than the ones that we've initiated. Here in the Western Cape, we will be setting up one of the international centers for genetic and engineering biotechnology. And it will be the third in the world. There are only two others in the world, one in Italy and one in India, and we were awarded the third one. And I think this is a really critical area. It relates not just to genetic engineering, but it actually the focus of it is around infectious diseases. So all of the work that they do is research, biotechnology, and genetic engineering in the prevention against infectious diseases. Tumbandila said, the construction has been completed. We do not have good launch facilities in South Africa, so we have to try to deal with the Russians. And we will be launching Tumbandila Sat round about the 3rd week in June, weather permitting. We also shortlisted with Australia. Only other contender is Australia for hosting the Square Kilometre Array. Members may already be familiar. If we win this bid, we will actually get the Europeans investing something like 9 billion in building the Square Kilometre Array here in the Northern Cape. As part of trying to win this bid, we committed that we will build CAP, which is a smaller version, Karoo Array Telescope, to demonstrate to them we can do it. And we've completed the prototype design for CAP, which is the smaller version, as I say, of the Square Kilometre Array. We've attracted significant foreign direct investment in our local biotech industry. That goes back to what I was saying about leveraging international resources. On the infrastructure side, we're on track in general in setting up the high performance computing center. This will allow scientists to analyze their data at a faster rate. They'll be able to arrive at solutions on diseases and a whole range of things using this high performance computing. So they no longer rely on their brains. With all kinds of algorithms, the computers can kick out answers at a faster rate. The South African Research Network plan, we're working very closely with the Department of Public Enterprises and the new InfraCo that has been established. This is a research network that will link our universities and our research institutions so they'll have internet connectivity at an affordable rate. Nanotechnology, working at smaller levels than your micro level, at a nano level. We believe this is where new metals, new health technologies and so on can happen. New answers found, and we are putting in place the equipment infrastructure to empower us to be able to work on nanotechnology. We have a very broad research equipment program for universities and research institutions. Unfortunately, it's heavily oversubscribed. There's so much equipment that needs to go into these universities and these institutions before they can consider themselves as modern laboratories that we actually need to ramp this funding up. SACHI is the South African Research Chairs Initiative. And this is where I indicated to you that we would like by 2010 to have 210 research chairs across the country. 21 have been awarded. The minister awarded them recently. There's another 35 that will be awarded in the near before this year is over. Now, just looking at a system level, we have got cabinet endorsements that we would be spending. By 2008, we would be spending 1% of our GDP on R&D. A country that spends on research and development is engaged in productive investment. And we said a minimum of 1% by 2008. In the survey results of 2004, we saw that we were at 0.87. And this is where we began to get worried, and we rather went and we managed to get the tax incentives to encourage even private sector investment up. But right now we can safely say we are on the way up. There in 2004, we had moved from a 0.81% to that 0.87. And the most recent R&D survey, that's the 2005 result, which at this point in time only DST is privy to because it's a preliminary result. I can honestly say it's taking us closer to that 0.9%. So we are on the road to 1% GDP by 2008. We're very confident about that. Now, when we went to Treasury with our budget submission last year, we had indicated that there is room to have more research activity to leverage these strategic areas I was talking about, growing the science, engineering, and human resources workforce of the country, and to do more on policy planning and monitoring and evaluation for the cyber infrastructure we wanted to link up on the internet. High speed, ease, cost access with the universities, the research councils. We went and we said we needed about 400 million. And then there were other core infrastructure that we needed. This is what we put to Treasury. This, unfortunately, is not what we received. You know that most departments, they go, some with wish lists, some with structured plans like ours, but we don't always come back with our hands full. Okay, so one of the things we had pitched to Treasury is that we're working on the absorptive capacity of South Africa's science system. Do more research. Have the right people doing that research, have the right infrastructure for it. So really when you look at it, you see that we were plugging. Innovation and research funding is oversubscribed. There's lots of work to be done. So we need these new centers of excellence, more chairs and so on. Human capital, there's a squeeze on it. NRF needs to increase both the reach, that means how many people they're reaching with these research grants, especially in universities that are still developing, and the grant size to the researchers. The equipment and the large infrastructure. What did we get? This is what we got from Treasury. And as you can see, this is the 2006-07 figures across the different programs, administration, research, development and innovation, international relations, human capital. You can see that comparatively a big chunk And then this is the sector socio-economic partnership funding, which includes your CSR and so on, your HSRC and those institutions. Here is what was allocated to us. This is now from 2006 to 2007-8, a big jump, and you should actually congratulate us. A big jump. We've increased the funding for human capital development. That is almost the area that received the biggest allocation. And this is like really continuing over the 3-year period. In terms of the notes, you see 8% increase for this 2007-8, and the following year it actually jumps to a 12% increase. And what pleases us is that it's an incremental growth, it's small, but at least it is greater than inflation. So it actually allows you, your equipment costs more. And so if they had just given us as much as the inflation rate is, we'd simply be buying and we'd be meeting inflation. But they've actually gone slightly over inflation, so that was quite pleasing. The new funding streams, I'd indicated it's that 10% square kilometer array build, the human capital development strategies, and I have two colleagues here, Les and Mbeki, who are able to talk to some of the things around youth into science and those programs, the core R&D infrastructure, and our planning and monitoring work. If we look comparatively, again, as I said, the major areas was on the R&D work and the infrastructure fund, and you can see with the blue line is where Treasury had pitched us to grow, slowly. And then they really accepted the proposal we put through, and you can see a massive growth, shift in the growth that is now happening. So there we have another different breakdown in terms of operational expenditure, transfers and subsidies, and capital payments. And of course, we're one of those departments. We're science and technology, but we're actually not sitting there as scientists. We're administrators. All of the research is happening elsewhere. It gets transferred out of the department. So the major portion, 92%, close to 93%, is transferred out to universities, CSR, NRS, and those institutions. Here's another breakdown, and again, you can see the profile within the department. Human capital got a 40% share of that. And then the sector socio-economic partnership profiling, that is where your impacts are on the economy and on society. It's got almost the second largest share. I'm going to go through these. There's another breakdown looking at it in terms of the transfers and so on. The public entities, there you now will see real evidence of how this new budget played out. These are small figures. If you look at NRF, a 70 million growth, and it's 11%. But HSRC is 36, and yet it's 30%. It's because HSRC is sitting with a smaller budget, so the percentage increase to them is actually bigger. These are really small shifts. This is where the big shifts come in. Human resource development. A 235% increase. So in other words, we really mean business about growing the science, engineering, and technology, human capital in this country. And on the modern infrastructure, the square kilometer array, the frontier science, and so on. I'll move very quickly to the legislation, the new legislation that we have before us. I've mentioned intellectual property rights. We are seriously concerned that we must get the benefits of the research we're paying for. And so there is this new bill. The policy went through cabinet, but now there's a bill that's going through the parliamentary process. And Lucia will talk through these. The date is the 13th of March. We expect to get to cabinet by?
No, we did. Yeah.
Okay, good. So this is South African Academy of Engineering Bill. The members will recall that they were involved at some point, and if you were around at that time, you'll remember my own face as well, with ASA, the Academy of Sciences of South Africa, where we went through that bill, and we did come to the select committee. And now we're coming through with another one which is heavily biased towards the engineering side. The Inventions Development Bill, this will help us put in place that foundation for technological innovation which I'm telling you about. And then the Space Agency Bill. And on that note, let me say thank you for your attention. I hope I haven't taken too long and I've allowed some time for questions.
Thank you very much. I don't know if there's anybody who wants to make an addition from your entourage. If there is, he or she is welcome to the school. Oh, I see. Thank you very much. I think the presentation was very exciting. Enjoyed every moment of it. Thanks very much. Now, honorable members, I think I'm now going to open the floor for questions and answers. I'll ask you, start with Honorable Tejane, Honorable Mazungubo. Those are the two hands that I see for now.
Chairperson, I just want to check with the department. I see on your mapping exercise, it might not be there, but there's a place where you're dealing with the funding, your NFR, your HRS, whatever those abbreviations are. You see,
I think before that, maybe I need to ask, because you see, once you leave, you are talking to them now, but once you leave, some of these abbreviations don't make sense to many of us. You know, I think it will be good, maybe for future purposes, so that all these acronyms, you've got some, a list of them, you know, where they are speaking. Because as it is now, I mean, you understand what you are saying now, but once you go, I have a problem in remembering what they mean, you know, because every department has got its own acronyms. Thank you.
Yeah, you see, what I was just want to check here is, well, I'm quite happy with what you have actually presented to us, and issues that will actually deal with the other matters of us being a country that can do things or develop science-related innovations. You see, I hear you talking about funding, and your funding is at the highest level. I don't hear at this point in time, when you mention schools under your mapping exercise, you're talking of a science week, your expo, and this to me are those activities that expose learners to what is taking place, what is happening in the country. But I don't hear you saying, how are we really taking learners from a grade 12 level to an undergraduate training where you are directly involved in terms of funding and making sure that you capture these guys at an early age and you take them through. By the time they go at a higher level of postgraduate, they've been with you as an institution that is encouraging skilling of our population. But I'm getting worried. You know, each day, there are so many statistics of you've got 40,000 shortage of your social workers. Now, if you have that in the social sciences, now in the core science, it could be more. And then you're probably going to draw skills from elsewhere in the country so that now you can start making sure that now whatever plans you have as a department are realized. Now, my question is then, what are you doing? At that level of grade 12, as they exit, they go to the universities. How do you encourage them to take areas and areas that will benefit you as a department and as well as the country? And I know that when you do that, you'll also be providing skills and we have the highest qualified scientists. Let me tell you one thing. I realized when I took my daughter to the dentist, she was very scared to take the milk teeth out. So we didn't realize that the one is growing underneath. So, one day I was playing with her and I said, but it looks like in the mouth, there's more than one tooth in one area. And I said, dear, let me see. And she's very scared of, you know, going to the dentist. I had to back up to the point where she went there. Now, they take that particular milk tooth out, so the other one must actually find its way to the place. And they say they need orthodontist. Let me tell you what happens. In my there is an ex teacher, and yes, now I'm told by dentists to say this is a highly specialized training. You must be a dentist first, at least for 4 years, practicing as a dentist before you go on to that specialization. And I asked one dentist why. They said, "Do you know how many nerves are crossing around here?"
How many? There are so many things. Your muscles shape up. What happens? And I say, in Polokwane, in Mpopo, where I'm coming from, there's not a single person who is an orthodontist. All of them are coming from Pretoria into Polokwane once or twice a month. So what I'm saying is, in that area, I'm just giving that as an example, where, you know, you live, you're having this element where you in the sciences, you got, can be medical, can be anywhere, we've got a shortage. Now, I'm saying the department, as much as you're finding people there, you who takes them there? Do you have a way of pushing them from lower to there? As a department, you know, Chairperson, I can talk the whole day with the science. I've been a science person, not a, like you, Chairperson, who has been in history.
You know, if you become now disrespectful to the chair, you may be chucked out of the meeting. Okay, fine. I saw another hand. Honorable Mazibu? Then Honorable Sulu there?
Yeah, Chairperson, just to add a bit on what Member Peter was saying, sort of a kind of a program where there's mentoring, you know, of young people to say, this is the field that we can take, and this is how far we can basically tell. Because, you know, as I was listening to the presentation, Chairperson, I'm sitting and wondering, what the hell does it got to do with my constituents? I don't see anywhere where it says, we are talking this big English with so many acronyms, and the ordinary person there in Orange Farm will say, no, I will benefit out of it through this and that. They are talking this biotech, what, coming to take part. Why take part? Why can't you say it to Mpumalanga or Eastern Cape or Karoo, you know? Why always take to develop, Saba, or in the kingdom of Wazulu? Why not take it somewhere there? So that then it encourages even your rural youth that are there to say, you know, there are these old things, you see them on TV, about space battle and whatever. I've never heard in South Africa them saying, you know, there's a woman who now was in that space battle. All the time I see moons going on space. But I've never seen a person who looks like me going on space. So to say, to what extent are you actually also going to have program that will also, not decentralize, your simplified language to say an ordinary person in your township or in rural area can basically understand what work are you basically doing there? Yeah, I've talked about science and technology. They think it's something that is happening in the space battle, Neil Diamond in 1910. They don't know that actually here in South Africa, some of these things actually exist. If I can get a clarity on that. Secondly, I noticed that 90% of your budget actually goes to a secular institution. Now, what about your ordinary, the FET, I saw it a bit, but I don't know to what extent is it making an impact. And to what extent is your money is also linked to what you call your NAPFAP, National Education, you know, the fund that actually, NSFAP, they look at it, assisting young people to actually. And also the job creation part of it. I mean, the minute you step into a social institution, you say the end result is that I must actually be able to be a doctor, or I must be able to be a nurse, or whatever. So in other words, job opportunities that actually exist. So in your various acronyms that are there, what is the output of it in relation to young people actually getting this? And also if you can get also breakdown in gender, how many young women are actually interested in this field? Or are we only focusing on those old men with grey hair and grey shoes? You find them in grey suits, you know, you find always them in these lands. Where are we putting young women in trying to encourage them to say, this is your future? Right? Nowadays, you only hear them talking about technology, computers, whatever, but you never hear anyone say, go for science and technology, go for this. So to say, exactly what it is that I'm doing, that I'm able to respond to my
constituents. Yeah. Hello, you see, you must not see only the men with grey shoes, but also see the women with a crumpling skirt. May you respond, please? I don't think I love
The schools, the awareness creation, those kind of investment areas. And possibly, Betty, will you touch on the whole pipeline approach in the new human capital development strategy and the focus on PhDs and research output. And then I'm going to talk after them on the distribution and the provincial focus, as well as the relationships with the FECs and the employment creation side.
Thank you, Chair. Recently, in March, Cabinet discussed the department's youth into science strategy and accepted the thrust proposed in the youth into science strategy. And I'll just deal with the gist of the strategy. Currently, we've got an incentive scheme which has got a number of elements. I'll just take you through them. The first one deals with the camps. These are taking place in all the 9 provinces. Learners from disadvantaged backgrounds with talent and potential in maths and science are identified, working together with the provinces, especially the provincial departments of education. Meaning that 1,800 per year are identified. And the breakdown is that we have at least 55% of them are girls, and then 45% of them are boys in the camp during the vacations. And then they are exposed to role models, they are exposed to information about science, engineering, and technology careers. And these careers, I mean, are multiplying by year. I mean, engineering is a broad field, and every year you're getting, it's increasing the number of opportunities that are emerging there. And we're working with a professional body called CETANC to make sure that these learners have got the right information so that they make the informed decisions. And the information is divided into two parts. We notice that some of our learners are starting to do very well in medicine. But you find that around March, they're in the townships, they're at home. And when you ask, it's because mainly that they didn't know that they must apply, for example. And so it's, that kind of information in education is very important. So what we do in the camps is to provide them, number one, with the forms. We're not saying go and find the forms, just to supply them with application forms for universities. Secondly, provide them with application forms for scholarships. And so we are working with the CETANC to make sure that we've got a database of scholarships. And then once they have passed, we intend having a support at an undergraduate level. Currently, we don't have that support, but this is currently being established. So that those with talent and potential, once they choose to study science, engineering, and technology, they will receive support at undergraduate level. Currently, we've got a partnership with SAICA, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, and we're working together with the SAICA in the camps. And we find that when it comes to business, I mean, to careers in the business sector, SAICA has done very well, because in the camps, those who pass and go and register for BCom and they want to become chartered accountants, the support system throughout until they become chartered accountants is well designed. They've got relationships with institutions. They've got offices in the universities, number of universities. And then currently that is what we're establishing with this incentive scheme. And then once they have the support system at undergraduate level, we're negotiating with industry, especially if now have a collaboration with the Department of Trade and Industry, to make sure that once when they study during vacations, they're also getting work opportunities, experiential learning. And then this will enable them when they complete, if they do well, they will be able to use that as a part of their CV. And then we're not going to have the situation that we are having, where we are starting to see an increase in the number of unemployed science graduates. We must have the whole cycle, you know, short-circuited, especially as those who are like us, I mean, learners from disadvantaged backgrounds, make sure that they penetrate the science system. And those who choose to study postgraduate, there will be a support system that is in place through the NRM bursaries and so on and so on. Currently, what needs to be done and cracked is between matric and second year. Because businesses, the business sector, corporate sector, they want to provide scholarships for learners who are doing third year and on. Because the risk is not as high as if you are going to provide scholarships for the first year. And that is where I think we need to crack. Then the kind of numbers that we need in 10 years' time, we can easily get those. And that's where the support system that we want to put in place will be established. Now, so that is the incentive scheme that we have put in place. But in general, in order to have more young people pursuing careers in science, engineering, and technology, you also need to improve the science and technology literacy rate of the country. And so awareness campaigns like the National Science Week play an important role. And this, when we implement the National Science Week, we choose venues, especially in the remote areas of our country. So every year when the minister launches National Science Week, he will choose a township or a rural area. Like this year, the city chose Kutadicha, where in fact the most of the members of the of that township, which is the third largest township in the country, I mean, attended in numbers, even if they are not doing math or science and their parents are illiterate, but they're very much interested to know what is the role of science and technology in the country and how can they persuade their children to take subjects in math and science, whether they've gone to school or not. So that awareness campaign is very important, and then therefore it supports the efforts to identify this talent among our communities and nurture it until they become either scientists, technologists, or they work in the industry sector. Thanks, Chair.
Well, Chair, before, I think there's some small follow-up there, you see, because for me, it remains a little abstract until one has got, you know, you've got all these people you are supporting the different projects. First, I want to get a list for each and every project. So as when you go back to our program, we used to say, in this area, these are the people. So we can actually even get in touch with them. Otherwise, it remains a little abstract for me. When you do our oversight, you also want to see and talk to them and find out if they help you also. You know those type of things.
Yes.
Is it possible?
Yes, Chair. We are a member of an interprovincial task team. We've got MST coordinators, we've got names and contact numbers. I can easily leave them with your office.
Get in touch with our secretary. I think every province is interested in seeing that every, you know, presented in this committee. Is that a follow-up? Follow-up, yeah?
Yes, yes, sir. I'm speaking.
Follow-ups on the answer that is given.
Yeah. It's not a neat question, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think what is being done is explained. It's fine. But is there not a way that, you know, I'll give you an example of my situation in my province that is too rural. You know, we spend time during our constituency week not sitting at home. Most of the time some of us are at schools. They even invite you to come and talk to students, talk to teachers. I do that. I'll be doing that in the next week or so. But in that period, when you go to a school or in your region, you then identify and know that there's one or two brilliant, over-brilliant kids. How then do we, if a province misses such kids? You know, because it does happen that as you do this work with the provinces, the deep rural are a little bit ignored because they never get to touch with the province, and you don't have your district managers anymore that go to schools. If a principal, like the one we've seen in Honorable Suleiman's province, that had 99% of the questions that we were asking, he didn't know a principal. I don't know. Every question, I don't know. When you get such principals and teachers in those schools that do not know anything, those learners end up wasted because teachers don't know. Principals don't know. I'm saying, as the chairperson is saying, where this list and so on and so on, is there a way where if you bump into a situation where how do we get these kids to get hold of you? Not me, but these kids to say, if a principal says, here's a brilliant kid in math and science, and we're quite comfortable, you find a learner has got B's and A's and so on, but this learner, how do we then make sure that these kids are known to you so that now you can proceed with identifying where the child can go and what support can actually be given? But I'm really disappointed. When you say the risk at third level is low, the country must take the risk at a lower level, undergraduate level, so that now that risk can pay off or pay or not pay off. But let's take the risk from the lower level where we see there's a brilliance in this child, so that now we don't capture them at that level because they may not reach there. But if we start them there, then they can proceed to the higher level. Yeah, Chairperson, yeah, you know.
That we want to leave also, that to say that this is where we can be found. What is the kid who is gifted, and this is the information that we must give to that kid so that that kid comes in contact with us. I think we will deliver that information as well. Thank you. Can we get another part of the puzzle?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, within the DST, actually, we do follow this pipeline approach or a conveyor belt approach to human capital development. And hence the two units, actually, left unit, which deals with science and youth, and the unit that I'm particularly responsible for, which deals with human capital, and we call it high-end skills. So we start, we take off where left unit ends, you know, at the interface, at the start of postgraduate studies. But also, I think there is work that we do, you know, that we do concurrently with left unit, particularly, you know, in ensuring issues of access, retention, and success at undergraduate level, so that we get the right numbers at postgraduate level. One of those initiatives is the life skills and academic support program, largely because of the problem that has been mentioned by Les, where you find students with 5, 6, 8 presenting themselves for a first year of study at a university, and 5 or 6 months down the line, they are out of the system because of the lack of, you know, a comprehensive academic and life skill support program. There is work that we're doing there. But also in terms of ensuring the right numbers, we've been knocking hard at the doors of NSFAS in terms of having a proportion of their funds, you know, ring-fenced for science, engineering, and technology. And we're hoping to make a breakthrough soon on that. But also one of the challenges that we're experiencing is the challenge that I think comes from, you know, the socioeconomic pressures that black kids in particular have. When they finish their undergraduate studies, there is always a lucrative, you know, employment market or labor market that actually taps onto this pool of students. And whereas from our side, we also need them for further studies. So we've really come up with you know, lucrative bursaries at that interface, the undergraduate to postgraduate, just to make it a point that, you know, we provide that lifeline for them to want to continue, take it one step further in terms of presenting themselves for postgraduate studies. And also in terms of the numerous human capital instruments that were mentioned, centers of excellence, the South African Research Initiative that we give to universities, we always make a report. We put very, very, I would say, challenging, you know, and very demanding equity targets. You know, all these awards, they come with bursaries for students. If a research chair has been appointed to an institution, a portion of that award is for bursaries. And we very much, we come out very strong in terms of the equity targets, in terms of women students,
black students, you know, and you know, individuals from disadvantaged communities. Yeah, I would definitely stop there.
Thank you very much. You want to come in, ma'am?
I will just add on one last point there, in that in our 10-year plan, we are being bold and proposing that this government take some serious risks, and we are encouraging that the investment, especially at the beginning of the pipeline, be escalated fivefold over this 10-year time frame, so that we want to actually have more youngsters entering and staying in science, engineering, and technology, right from matric through to until they've got postdoctoral degrees. I do want to talk to the issues of employment and how do we try to ensure that these youngsters don't just walk around with a degree and then they can't find jobs. That's on the one hand. We have established a database for unemployed science, engineering, and technology graduates. And that is to ensure that when anything comes up, we are able to actually dig into that database and assist those youngsters to find employment. It also helps us with another program we're driving from the department, which is the internship program. With one of our instruments, we work with the universities of technology, which was your Technicons before. And we have what we call stations, technology stations. And it's run by a program called Chumisano, which some of you may be familiar with. Now, with Chumisano, University of Technology, let's say the campus in Harangua, there they were doing with chemicals. You know? So this is what we established, and then it reaches small businesses out there. But the beauty of working through that is we are able to take youngsters and put them in internships, either there at the University of Technology or at the small businesses that are being supported by the University of Technology. So across the board, we've got these universities of technology. We've attached with Chumisano another initiative called the Institute for Advanced Tooling, and I urge members to go into Social Gouve and go see what we've placed there in terms of tooling, which is very important for manufacturing. And then you also look in Soshenguve, we've got another instrument which I mentioned earlier on, the Fab Lab, which we want to roll out into the other provinces and target both youngsters and it targets people who don't have engineering backgrounds, they don't have science backgrounds, but they're full of ideas about products. They can actually use this equipment that is user-friendly, and they can model and design things, and then they can prove that if they can make 10 of these things, then they can make 100, whether it's a coat hanger or whether it is something novel that they can actually then start producing out there. We call those fab labs. So, as much as you may see, we're going to build a telescope in the desert there in the Karoo. It's only because that telescope has to be built there because it needs to be radio quiet. But otherwise, there's a very definite effort on our part to reach out into the rural areas, into the most remote rural areas, and also in terms of the digital doorway, getting internet connectivity to communities and youngsters so they get a feel of this modern technology that can bring them information that can help them uplift themselves. So it is a commitment on our part to have greater distribution of our instruments, our interventions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, Chairperson, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but by the looks of things, let me start off by saying it's a pity we don't have enough time to interact with the department itself, because our committee is dealing with, how many, 7 or 8 other departments. So it's always difficult. But we are pleased to have you here with us today. By the looks of things, it seems to me that the department, bulk of the budget goes to the institutions for research and so forth and so on. What is not clear to me is that are we sort of just allocating funds to them to say, okay, continue with your research work? Or are we sort of directing them to say that, listen here, we would like you to do some research in a particular field and maybe come back with the results and how do they account and all these kinds of things. If somebody can just elaborate on that, I would appreciate that. Because it seems to me, I may be wrong, it seems to me that some of these institutions are doing research work which has already been discovered by other countries, gathering information and practical. I hope I'm wrong. Because if one looks at what is really taking place, you know, for the past 12, 13 years, I can't think of anything that we have discovered which is uniquely South African. You know, I once went to Japan, and I forgot to take my camera along with me, and I wanted to buy a camera there, and somebody came to me and said, but no, man, there's a camera there, you know, you use it and you throw it away after a while. You know, it's made of cardboard or something, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, it just shows us how far these people are and things like that. And that must be a product of their own. They've done research on it, they came up with some ideas, and it's on the market and in itself like sweet cake. So, I don't know, I may be wrong, but I think we are a bit far behind, be it in the medical or in the chemical fields and so forth. And I know that our department is trying its best, but one would like to see results at the end of the day where we can proudly say, this is what we've discovered and came up with that in South Africa, and it will become a product that we can market throughout the world. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You remind me, you know, this week I'll come back to you. On June this weekend, I attended a workshop for arts and culture in Bantin. One professor stood there and said, the crisis that we have in South Africa is that we're not able to produce new knowledge. What we do is send kids to school, whatever field, but for them to be able to make use of available knowledge that is there. That's not new. They can't come up with anything new. I still understand, but when Suli says this now, that it doesn't look like this, then in fact, I don't know. I think maybe because it's good for you to tell us that these are the things that we have actually not about that. We know, for you know, that it's this barracuda, this thing of cleaning swimming pool. It's South African technology. It's South African technology. There are other things which are South African technology, but I'm sure you're talking about in the new dispensation. New dispensation. Do you have anything that you can concretely say these were produced as South Africans in the 13 years that you've been in power? So that's I think what Parabu is talking about. Now let me just also ask one question. I see that you are aiming at, in terms of your budget, you are aiming at 1% of the GDP. And I see this here that countries that are doing very well, Japan and them, South Korea, and they are more than 3%, for instance. You know, of their budget is actually, of their GDP is actually good. But we are aiming at 1%. Why are we aiming so low? Why are we aiming so low, you know? For me, I think we are aiming very low if we want to be equal to some of these Asian tigers. If we want to be equal to them in some time to come. But if we are aiming at 1%, we will be nowhere next to them in some 20, 30 years. Or even 50 years in our lifetime. We will not be next to them. The other issue, which is, I think, the last one, I think it goes back to what other members have actually asked. You know, we've got these dilapidated schools in the country. This morning we're told that some of these schools, we have actually termed them dilapidated schools. They're supposed to get support from, you know, departments of education in the provinces. They're just nominally dilapidated. In terms of support, there's no support. You don't say that school is a dilapidated school, they leave it as it is. They think it was spent on its own, you know. And some of them have actually fallen out of the list because they're not able to. It is a big problem. Now, I am saying, as a Department of Education alone, it's not able to give them support across the line. And these are in the area of schools, science and technology are, you know, the main thing. What is it that we are doing as a department in relation to the area of schools? Somebody else said there earlier on that, you see these kids, it's difficult to teach old dogs new tricks. These science things and the like you say, can not be done when, you know, the kids are still young. To excite them at that age, you see. Because if you wait until a person goes to university and you want to catch him at that level, we are likely not to succeed, you know. In Japan and all these other countries, it starts right in primary school. It starts right there in primary school. We need to, you know, that kind of a situation. But it looks like we want to start somewhere. Maybe it's because we don't have funds. We're aiming at 1% only, you know. Maybe it's because of that. But if we would actually ask for more from the treasurer to say, we are, if you want us to succeed, if you want us to deliver, how so that you get these kids at that level where they are still receptive in terms of their minds, young minds and receptive minds, so they are able to do that. We just commend some of them, but you may want to respond. I want to give Masilo an opportunity to ask, because I think these are the last round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just follow up on technical technical insights of and technology. After you have mentioned social goals, I'm reciting Karangua, used to be technical, it's become technical, now it's science and technology. But really we don't have inside information what's happening there. Even most of our kids, when they complete their matric, grade 12, when you refer them, just go to Karangua Science and Technology or FET colleges. They just think it's that old model when you speak about the Kokalo Technica. So if maybe you can just highlight what are they doing there, do they have any achievement? And second one, Chairperson says for the past 13 years, what are the developments from science and technology? I remember when I was in the Northwest legislature, there was this silk cotton come from Wentz in Khanyisa. I think it was a project for science and technology. But now I think it's collapsed. So I don't know whether you have an idea about that project which was in Khanyisa.
Can you respond?
Yes, okay, I will. Go ahead. In terms of the hard results, I'll just mention one because I want to take all of the other questions. Our innovation fund supported the outcome of what we call the development of solar panels for producing electricity. Most solar panels now are used for water heating. But now the ones that are far more expensive and why you don't see them in use much in South Africa is the ones where you actually generate energy so that you can do, you know, a lot more things than just heat water. From South Africa, there's been a breakthrough in terms of reducing those costs of producing the solar panels by a factor of almost like 5. Now, we don't have the kind of factories that can produce those panels, those ones. We've got factories that can produce the solar panels that just heat water. But these others we don't, and so we're not in a position to actually secure European markets and others where these panels are used so actively. The Germans have jumped onto that, and they have bought a license from us to manufacture those panels. So we immediately have a market into Europe. And as a government, we facilitate the things that we allowed one of our agencies to hold shares in that German company in Europe, as well as about 3 South African companies to also hold shares. So they will benefit from the revenues from that manufacturer, and we structured the deal such that they cannot sell those new solar panels into Africa. That's our preserve. So in other words, we will actually have the second factory on those solar panels to be established here in South Africa, selling into Africa and in southern, the southern hemisphere and so on. So number one, we made an investment, a high-risk investment. It paid off. We're first in the world, and that is a recent breakthrough. We almost lost the intellectual property and the revenue streams that would go on from forever. And that is why it's sharpened our thinking that, number one, we need the foundation for technological innovation so that it harvests research results and commercializes them. Because we have discovered that that's one. But there's a whole range of lost opportunities. Breakthroughs in South Africa, the people get frustrated because they don't get support to turn it into a factory. results to Europe. And this is where now they sell it. Then they come back and they're sitting as professors in the universities and they continue a new stream of research. So there are some really strong things which I think we can get some of the information brochures really and distribute it. Even from some of the science councils, you see phenomenal stuff that has actually been emerging over these last few years. So some of their reports as well. Just in terms of at a lower level, this is not breakthrough stuff. This is just about making sure mature science and technology is working for our people. We've taken cage net fishing, aquaculture, and it's working wonderfully. We've proven the case. It's taken us a good few months, you know, to train people, to get it right, to make sure it works. We had one disaster. We're at the dam. They forgot to manage the controls properly. All of the water was released from the dam. 20 tons of trout were lost. But nevertheless, everything's on track. We've got a close relationship with Water Affairs. We're now making the state-owned dam in each province available to promote aquaculture. Right? So that's technology working for livelihoods. The essential oils. One of the initiatives outside of the essential oils is the one you've mentioned, Honorable Member, on the silkworms. From, what is that worm? The I can't remember what the name of that special worm is. There it was in the downstream processing side where there were weaknesses, and they actually stopped that initiative. Because Mopani worms, yes. The problem related to, yes, you can get the silk produced by these Mopani worms and so on, but the whole issue, the manufacturing challenge of converting that into material and so on, there just wasn't the right capacity to actually do it. So that initiative actually folded. But there's some very interesting ones that are happening in the other provinces, which we must bring to the attention of the honorable members, and we will forward the documents, the brochures that tell you where is the candle factory. That one is Hayanile in Giani. That's somewhere else. So there's a whole range of initiatives that are happening in the rural settings and so on. I should talk to your question about this 1%. When we pitched the 1%, at that time we thought we were being bold. That was a few years ago. But now we share your sentiment that we're being modest and that it's almost not going to work if we keep it at 1%. So what we are targeting in Treasury and even Cabinet accept that as we move with this 10-year plan, we hope over these next 10 years that we are going to drive that up to 2%. Because the OECD, these other countries that you look at, when you look at the average, there's some that are spending a lot. But when you look at the average, it's about 2.5%. Now, we're not as rich as the United States and so on. So 2%, we believe, is at least going a bit bolder. On the Jinnah Levy front, I mentioned that the two ministers met, Education and Science and Technology, and they accepted that there are serious problems with Jinnah Levy. And one of the major work issues that the two departments need to apply their minds to and report back to the ministers on is Jinnah Levy. So this is an issue that is going to be receiving attention. They don't have a solution just yet, but the two ministers have tasked their DGs to actually work together around that. On the Parankua initiative, what you're speaking about relates more to the FETs there. And the one I was referring to was the old Technicon, yes, which has since merged or been absorbed into Tshwane University of Technology. So there's those complexities that they're receiving more entrance for degrees and so on. They're shifting away from the old FET focus. So as an institution itself, they're still struggling with recapitalizing it, refocusing it, and so on. Okay.
Thank you. there are no other questions. But before, initially we were told that all South African scientists are aging scientists, you know, and we have a plan to replenish, you know.
Yeah, Chairperson, not this is a very easy one. No, Chair, I agree that we need to invest money in this particular field and so on. But a question that I'm asking myself is, are we happy, or is the department comfortable with the results that we are getting? We don't spend a lot of money, but I mean, almost 90% of the department funds goes into the research institutions. Are we happy the way they're conducting their work and the results that they are giving us? Because the reason why I'm asking this is, I mean, we want value for our money. And then if needs be, then we'll have to plow in more money. But if the department can just perhaps elaborate on that and tell us, are you guys happy with the results that you're getting from all these institutions, or are there room for improvement? Thank you.
Value for money. We get value for money. Or are we just an ATM, like an ATM, you know, an ATM just takes out money and doesn't share.
Then
you
should be interested. So post office magazine.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Sully, I think your question is a very pertinent question. It is something that we're consistently applying our minds to in terms of establishing whether we, in fact, are getting return on investment. As you would know, investing in science is not a short-term thing, and sometimes it takes you many years to actually see the fruits of what you've invested in. But as we go forward as a department, there are a number of instruments that we've actually put in place in terms of analyzing or assessing exactly what our outcomes or the outcomes of the science councils are. Just to give you a few examples, we have been, I think, one of the pioneers in the system to actually put in place shareholder compacts that are signed between the executive authority and the accounting authority in terms of what is going to be delivered. And we monitor these very, very closely. For now, we're pretty happy with the kind of outcomes that we are achieving. In addition to that, we have other kinds of instruments. We're very strict around monitoring performance in particular areas. And within the Science Council community, we have what we call the balanced scorecard approach that we are using in order to look specifically at outputs using particular perspectives. And this will not only look at the financial aspects, but also looks at non-financial aspects, the achievements of the Science Council. And thus far, I must say, if we're just looking at things and the way in which we've progressed over the years, it does seem to show that we are making a difference, however small or big it might be, but we are in fact making a difference.
Thank you very much. It does look like we have exhausted all the questions that we wanted to ask, and I want to take this opportunity to thank you very much, the department, for the engagement. I think it was a very lively engagement. You see, the problem is, in science and technology, it's not like in the Department of Housing, where we have built so many houses, or we have actually tarred so many roads, so many kilometers of roads. Sometimes, you know, the results are not very tangible, as they would be in other departments, you know. But be it as it may, I think we have had a very good engagement, and this is not the last. And I think I'm now getting the sense that we must actually interact with you more, unlike just once a year, you know, kind of thing. because it looks like there are many things that you are doing that you may not be aware of, and you really want to become aware of those. So that we can be in a position to go out there in our constituencies to say, these are the things that this department is doing and it needs to be supported. So that also we can be able to support you when you go to Treasury, wanting more money. We can be able to say to Treasury, we can actually engage with the, you know, fiscal and finance and fiscal, what you call it? FSC, yes. We can actually engage them to say, no, we think that department needs more money, you know, 1, 2, 3. But we can only be able to do that if we know exactly what it is that you're doing, you know? I just, with this few words, wanted to say thank you very much, unless you want to say something before we finally close. Thank you. We shouldn't forget that list of names and people, contact numbers of those people who are helping the provinces, the camps and the like, you know. And the question that was asked by him, what is it that needs to be done? Get in touch with you when there's a person who we think has got the potential. Yeah. Thank you very much once again. This meeting is adjourned for you, but honorable members, we're supposed to look at minutes. Yes. We were supposed to look at the minutes, but I see we're no longer forming a quorum. And then we can't adopt the minutes of the previous meeting. We will wait.